I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with FELC, the Fidelity Enhanced Large Cap Core ETF. Unlike passive ETFs, FELC is run by a team of experts to adapt to market conditions and pursue upside potential wherever it's hiding. And while you get the potential outperformance of an actively managed fund, you can still buy and sell it on your terms, just like any other ETF. Discover FELC, the Fidelity Enhanced Large Cap Core ETF, part of Fidelity's suite of active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/FELC. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The all-new season of Futurama is streaming on Hulu.
That's great, but I have to warn you, it's completely brilliant.
The interplanetary hit is back.
The very survival of Earth is at stake.
Is everybody okay? Is anybody hurt?
Nobody's okay. Everybody's hurt.
Watch the all-new season of Futurama.
That's the best damn show I ever saw.
New episodes Mondays, streaming only on Hulu.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back to preview the finals of both Euro 2024 and the Copa America 2024. Very, very exciting weekend ahead. So we thought there was no other way than to release an emergency podcast on this Friday for you to get stuck into before both of those big games. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host there. And joining me from across the water, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. England are in another final, so it's always a good feeling. Obviously, a very familiar one for us. We're used to these big occasions. But nevertheless, I'll still be able to enjoy it. It's a weird, Jack, I've got to say, because obviously, you spend as an Englishman your entire life, right, waiting to win a trophy. And
yeah. And a Fulham fan, I probably should add. It's been difficult.
I don't expect to win a trophy with Fulham ever. So that's just by the by. But with England, it should have happened by now. And I sense a nervousness and panic among my English friends right now. Because are you going to do the moment justice if it comes? Like, you always imagine, like, where are you going to watch it? Who are you going to be with? How wild will you go? How long will the night go on? What will the celebrations be like across London? Will you get the next day off? How long can you actually celebrate?
You just take the next day off. I mean, like, as in,
I had a day of work for years, so it doesn't really matter. but yeah, I'm obviously not there, so like it's out of my hands as to what I would actually normally be doing. Like, as it stands here, there's a couple of bars you can go to in San Diego, but I watched it in an English pub the other day, and I think I'll just go back to that English pub, even though some people...
Why change a winning habit, right?
Some people out here are boycotting it because they're charging a $10 cover, which I'm like, I'll just pay the $10, like I'm not going to overthink this.
I thought you were going to say it was $10 a pint, in which case you might think about boycotting
it. Well, mate, it's not far off that anyway now, is it? So it's that's pretty normal. But... yeah, like some of my mates, I could say, like, some of them are flying out to Germany like last minute and paying a fortune for it. Some are scrambling around for tickets. Some are just going to watch it in fan zones. Some are going up to London. Some are finding pubs locally to watch it in and making sure that they're just with their group and the groups that we've watched it with growing up. I don't know what I'd have done, mate, if I was still there. I think I'd have been hugely tempted to go.
I had a look just out of interest, flights to Berlin on Wednesday night, because my friends were messaging, you know, similar thing, being like, oh, I think I might be able to get two tickets, et cetera, for, you know, it's a big group of us. And I was like, lads, I think it's about £900 to fly to Berlin and you have to take an 8-hour stop in like Madrid. And really? So I was like, what about the rest of Germany? It's more expensive to fly to the rest of Germany and try and train in. I looked at Krakow. I looked at Leipzig. I looked at Prague. The way that we obviously went into Germany when we went the other week was we went to Eindhoven and got the train across the Dutch-German border, which right. was incredibly easy if you're going to the northwest of Germany. But it's not very easy to get to Berlin, which is in the east central part of Germany. So I was looking at like how long those trains would take. They would take ages is basically the shorthand.
Especially what we're hearing about the German trains at the moment. That's probably not very safe.
I mean, that's not something I think you'd want to be risking, but it was incredibly expensive. Look, I mean, supply and demand, right? And I imagine that those people who gambled on England being there when they got through maybe the group or even further, would have done this well in advance, and they would have been expensive then. But what we're seeing now is absolutely wild. And like, just even going to like Prague, which is still a long way from Berlin, you know, it might be closer than Eindhoven, but it's still a fair distance. That's an expensive trip this weekend.
Yeah, a few of my mates did already have the flights lined up. So they'd gone out to the semi-final. They actually got a ticket actually for the semi-final and went. And they're flying back out. Flying back out today or tomorrow? Tomorrow, I think.
I think I would have just held. Honestly,
said to me, "I've got a spare flight. If any of your mates want to just change the name," so I was like, "Oh, so I would have got a flight. I would have just had to do a name change." But then I would have been with them. But like, they're not my like that's my
the group you're watching.
Brother-in-law and his mates.
So would I
want to go with them, or do I want to be with my actual mates that I've watched for the last 30 years, England games with, it's a real conundrum,
mate.
I get it.
I know exactly who I would want to be with if Ireland were in the final of anything, really, to be perfectly honest with you. It could be the, you know, handball World Cup. and I know who I'd want to be watching it with. But it's one of those, Ali, look, I've got some Gaelic football to watch this weekend, so that'll keep me occupied on Sunday, I'm sure. watching Galway versus Donegal in the All-Ireland semi-final. But look, should we come on to the game? We're going to do both today. We're going to talk about the Copa after the break, but before that, we're going to discuss this Euros final. We obviously haven't chatted all that much about the semi-finals because they took place midweek and in the middle of our episode drop then. So let's start with England. Let's talk about the semi-final. From kind of my perspective, this was England's best performance of the tournament by a mile. It still wasn't perfect, I don't think. And especially in the second half, I thought that England struggled to gain control of the midfield in the way that they had in the first. But the first 35, 40 minutes amongst the best I think England have played at this tournament. And look, we can debate the penalty all night long. I don't think it's a penalty. I think you'd be absolutely livid if that got given against you in any other circumstances. But as you say, laws of the game, modern game, studs showing, any excuse. I get it. I don't think that the controversy being thrown around, that the referee being, you know, involved in a match fixing scandal is potentially worthwhile. I think it's one of those decisions that's probably slightly incorrect in my opinion, but not egregious. And so when you come to all of this, I think what it comes to is, are England starting to gather momentum and gather a bit of speed at the right time?
Firstly, I love VAR, always have.
You've always said that.
I absolutely, in real time, was not expecting a penalty. Even when they showed the replay, I was like, oh, his studs are up. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, Kane's just followed through on his foot. But then as soon as it went to check, you're like, it's going to be a pen, because that is how it is in Europe and that how it is in modern football. If your studs are up, it's going to be a pen, and that would be given anywhere else on the pitch, actually. If you went in like that around the halfway line, that would be given as a free kick. So in old days, that ain't a penalty in a million years. These days, it actually is a penalty. So I'll take it. The interesting thing about the performance was the goal massively helped. Going behind was a massive bonus to England in the end, because it meant we had to play. And I said that to everyone sat around me, like, you just had to accept the goal. Like, it's an absolute worldie from Xavi Simmons. Yeah, and so you're like, okay, there's nothing we can do about that. I'm not blaming anyone. I'm not mad. That's just a brilliant goal. And I was like, the thing is, Spain in their game went behind and they turned it around. We now have to do that. We have to show that we deserve a place in the final, because so far we don't really deserve a place in the semi-final. So at some point in a tournament, you have to show that you deserve to still be in it. And that's what they did. England did show they deserved to be in it. And it was a great rest of the first half performance. Not just England's best performance of the tournament. I'd say one of the best performances that any of the top teams has put in across a spell of a game. I'm not saying that that was extended over the full 90, but it was a good performance and I was very, very happy with it. But obviously, you've now got to counter that, because the same tactic wouldn't work in this match. If you go 1-0 down to Spain, I haven't got the same confidence about then turning that game around, because Spain will hit you back the other way more likely than Holland were ever going to do. That's the risk factor you're playing with now. But it was such a comforting performance, I'd say, more than anything. It gave us some belief that we are a good football team. And more than anything, that's what we needed. Now, there are various factors here that we'll go into, but that is the first most important thing, showing that we actually deserve to be in a final, and we do deserve now to be in a final. Spain are the best team so far, but we are the second best team in this tournament so far. And even though that sounds ridiculous, because we've only played well, probably if you tally it up across all of the matches so far, we've probably played well for not even a full 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably still give that accolade to Germany right now, considering the way that they were knocked out by Spain, but I take your point.
Yeah, because like with England, it's the mixture of showing how they are capable of playing, also coming up with the moments that you need to win a tournament. That counts for so much. Like, it's not about full 90-minute performances in tournament football. It's about staying in a game and then coming up with the Bellingham moment, basically, of scoring a last-minute overhead kick. It's about holding your nerve in penalties. It's about doing the Ollie Watkins. These are really significant moments in tournament football. And actually, I don't think it's that been played up enough. We harp on about years gone by and we look at great goals from past tournaments with England, and you always go back and there's World Cup 90 and people get David so Platt, nostalgic, right? And David Platt and all that, and like, I don't know that like it's really sunk in as to what we've actually, the moments that we've seen in this tournament have sunk in to be as big as the moments that we have of years gone by.
I thought there was a brilliant tweet by a friend of the podcast, Mr. Sammy James, who our patrons will know well from the Euros diaries when we were in Germany.
Yeah, good coverage.
He said, going to be hard to explain in years to come why England's run to the Euro 2024 final was boring when there was a 95th minute overhead kick, a win on penalties, and an 89-59 winner from a striker who'd been a glorified cheerleader until the semi-final, which I did think was a good point, because I do think that doesn't, you know, those things, and if you watched all of the 90 minutes and you watched all of those games, you'd be able to explain it, right? But, you know, when that comes up as a highlights montage, people could be like, wow, that looks fun. That looks like it was a great tournament. And then maybe that's not the reality, but it is interesting to look at those moments in the context of where they are. And as you say, you know, this is a team that feels like it knows when to seize those moments. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think Spain are the best side in this tournament and have been almost since the first whistle, right? They've been entertaining. They've been incredibly flexible in the way that they've set up. They've been direct at times. They've knocked the ball around well to control games at times. I think they've done everything that you kind of expect a side who are dominant in the tournament. And look, they've become one of the very few sides to win six games out of six getting to a final. I think only Brazil in 2002 won a tournament whilst winning every single game at that tournament. So it's not something, you know, it might feel like something that comes around relatively often. It doesn't. It's not a common occurrence for a side to go and win every game of a tournament, even if they go on to win it. But I think that dominance has been reflected. Equally, I think it's quite hard to pin them as favourites, given the fact that what's happened in this tournament is that we've seen over and over again that no matter how bad it's been, no matter how drab and dull, and there have been problems left, right and centre with England at times, mostly left, to be honest, but you kind of look at that and you think they found a way every single time to get through it. What's to say they can't find another moment like that when the final comes around? And to be honest, when people have been asking me about this and people saying, you know, what do you reckon for the final? Logic kind of goes out the window. You know, this hasn't been a particularly logical tournament in terms of the best team or the team who have created most opportunities or had more of the ball or whatever that looks like, haven't always gone on to win games apart from Spain. And so when it comes to this kind of moment in a final, and yes, Spain have this incredible record. I think since 2001, they've played in 26 finals, four of them all Spanish, the other 22, the Spanish side, whether that be in European competition or in international competition, have come out on top. All of that kind of goes out the window because this Spanish side haven't been there, right? This is not a side that have that final experience in a way that England have, obviously, with the loss to Italy 3 years ago. I think this is pretty 50-50 from where I'm sitting. And I think that there's a danger of the narrative becoming Spain should win this because they've been the better team across the tournament, when we know that that is not necessarily how tournament football works.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And I'll be honest, like, coming into the tournament, if you said you'll be playing Spain in the final, I'd have been like, absolutely, we'll take that. Like, Spain were not fancied coming into this tournament to be at this stage. And I'm not saying that that means that we're going to win it, but of all the opponents, of all the players that were coming out to Germany, Spain weren't the best. Like, on paper, they were not the best. Now, they've proved that they, as a team, gelled better, but mate, they don't have a massive fear factor about them when you go through them player by player.
Do you not think? See, I actually disagree with you. I think that in the two wingers who have not only lit up La Liga this season and then gone on to light up this tournament in their own right, they also have probably the best player in the world right now in Rodri commanding this midfield. And that's where I think that you look at this and go, well, yes, on paper, England's team is better than Spain's. I agree. But actually, in terms of players who have stepped up, turned up and put it on this tournament, how many England players would be in a team of the tournament right now? Two?
Well, by Sunday night, about eight.
But this is what I mean. So, like, but going into the final, I was drafting a team of the tournament.
No, they are the best
the other
team,
day.
Yeah.
No. But I was just drafting a team of the tournament the other day, and I found it very difficult to put more than two England players in. And even then, they were Pickford and Gehi. And there's an argument that Mike Maignan has been a better goalkeeper across the tournament than Pickford has. And there's probably an argument to suggest that in the plethora of excellent centre-back performances, Mark Gahey has been, I think, England's best player. Even then, I think he struggles. Saka's been exceptional, but Lamine Yamal's been better on that wing. I struggle to find another England player that goes into this team and you go, yeah, rock solid, absolutely no question.
Yeah, I mean, look, what I mean really by fear factor is, like, I'm literally looking at their lineup from the semi-final, and I just look at the back line that they used for that game, and I'm like, okay, a back four is Jesus Navas, Nacho, Laporte, and Cucurella. But with England's array of talent to go up against that, like, I would have fancied us to get at that. Now, obviously, it might not be that four, but that's not really the point. And then even in midfield, Rodri and Fabian Ruiz, look, they have obviously both had very good tournament, and I'm not saying they haven't. But again, you look at what England have got. Like, Mainoo's already bested Rodri this season. He just done him in an FA Cup final, right? So so don't worry about that. Kobbie Mainoo is going to leave Rodri in the dirt. But on a serious note, look, Rodri obviously has the... Both these teams in all their matches control, right? So you've got... I think the stats are that Spain have an average of 57% possession, England 58. So that obviously cannot continue. So where does...
Yeah, I mean, famously, that doesn't add up.
So where's the dominance going to go? Is it going to be that Rodri continues to control games, and do England allow him to do that? Or is Southgate's plan to get hold of that ball and to dominate the game? That is actually a really telling factor of which way this game goes, because I think both teams want the ball. I don't think either team wants to give up that command. I mean, you'll have a better sense than me as to, from a neutral perspective, who you think would suit better to not have the ball, who could thrive in that sense. But that's where the Rodri situation does become interesting, because there's no getting around the fact that he has been the best midfielder. I do think that a long season's taken its toll on him a little. Like, I think that for him, he's looking tight. I think Bellingham's obviously out on his last legs too. And both of those two guys have had ridiculous years. Like, the amount of minutes in their legs is crazy. And to now be in your seventh game in a few weeks is going to be taking its toll. And you're kind of getting through on adrenaline and massages at this point. And you're just like, just get me through the minutes. But, yeah, when I say fear factor, it's because, like, beyond Lamine and Nico Williams are obviously talked about a lot, and I've talked about them, how brilliant I think they are too. But we're not talking about, like, Messi and Ronaldo here. Like, we're talking about players. Lamine.
The Messi
Lamine,
clone.
The Lamine, yeah, might turn out to be.
Blessed by Messi as a baby and now dropping these kind of performances.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's a team that aren't like the best of the best. And that's what I'm trying to get through here. It's like, they have been the best team at the tournament, but they're not like unbeatable. So far they have been, but they're not unbeatable.
What I think is really interesting about this Spain side, and look, I spoke about it on Monday's post box when we were asked about the videos out of Spain's camp. And I was like, it looks like a really good time. And the culture change within the camp, I think, has been really interesting under De La Fuente. And also that kind of sense of developing the idea of what Spain were, right? And I think that we've seen in the last couple of editions of tournaments that Luis Enrique tried to almost perfect that positional play style where everyone was in the right place. The pass maps looked absolutely perfect. And Spain tried to pass teams to death, but actually, when things didn't go their way, it was a lot of passing the ball around in front of other teams as opposed to actually getting in between them. That's changed, I think. And you spoke there before about who would suit better not having the ball. I actually think that whilst I think Spain will dominate the ball, but equally, there were periods in that second half against France where obviously they dropped deeper and deeper to try and preserve the lead. And at times, you know, you're thinking all it needs is one switch pass. And Lamine or Nico Williams are then one-on-one against a fullback. That is the last place you ever want either of those players. And I think the way that Spain tilt is interesting because they've tried to focus a lot of it down this left-hand side. And look, we spoke about this with Italy at the last Euro, so I feel like in some ways I'm repeating myself a little bit. But the way that Cucurella plays is not a million miles off what Spinazzola was doing in the last tournament for Italy. And that tilt to the left-hand side in order to make things over. And then that big switch ball across to leave their most dangerous one-on-one player, who at that time for Italy was Federico Chiesa, at this point for Spain is Lamine Yamal, one-on-one against a fullback. It's a tactic that they're not necessarily particularly similar teams, I would say. But actually, in terms of the way that they tilt the pitch and the way that they try to build up down one side and then look for that switch, there are things in common. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how England deal with that. Now, obviously, the back five probably helps. I think in terms of the way that England will try to defend the spaces and make sure that there aren't those gaps. But equally, I think this is going to be a lot of defensive work for Bukayo Saka. And this is something I wanted to kind of get onto. Bukayo Saka has been absolutely brilliant. But actually, I think where he's going to need to shine in this final, if England are going to win it, is in the defensive work. I think he did so well against the Netherlands, especially in that second half. You know, that digging in, coming and covering his fullback, and making sure that he is tucked in there in order to stop those advances down that side, because that is where Spain are going to go. And, you know, when you look at it on paper, the one thing you don't want to do is overload that left-hand side when you're playing France and leave Mbappe on his own, on his left wing, you know, one-on-one with a 38-year-old Jesus Navas to get him. And that's what Spain did anyway, because they were so confident in their own strategy. Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that and what the role is for England's left-back slash left-wing-back. Because if that's Trippier again, maybe this is actually the point that it works, because we know that what Lamine Yamal wants to do is come inside on that left foot and dink that cross into the back post. Obviously, Fabian Ruiz should have scored against France in the first minute with Lamine doing that and tucking inside and just dinking one up to the back stick. We know that he can shoot from those areas. We've obviously seen that in real time. We also know that that's what he does for Barcelona very, very regularly. So having a right-footed left-back for the first time this tournament might not actually be the worst idea from Gareth Southgate. In lots of games, I think it's been a real hindrance to England. Right here, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes with it one more time to see if he can cut that supply chain off from Lamine Yamal.
Yeah, that could definitely be a benefit. I think if we were playing a back four, I think I'd be more fearful than I am with this. I think one of the good things that came out of us being so poor was that Southgate has had second thoughts about his setup. And I've got to give credit to Gareth Southgate, because of all the stick he had, he has actually made changes. He's still stuck to what he believes in to a certain extent, but also taken on board some of the criticism. And, you know, imagine how Mourinho would have acted, or someone like that, if they'd have had this level of criticism, right? They'd have been like ramming it down people's throats and stuff like that, and like trying to turn it into a bit of a war. And Southgate didn't do that. And like, even you look at the celebrations after we won the other day, and Southgate is like, he's just like properly part of it with the England fans. He's just telling them one more, one more. And I think he understands the criticism. There's almost nobody else that understands England criticism quite like Gareth Southgate. He's been through it all. He's missed a penalty himself at a major tournament. He's got us knocked out. He's come back as a manager. He's helped us grow. And so while some people would have taken it personally, I think Southgate has just done so well to just kind of feel it out and just be like, okay, I understand, but stick with me. I'll try and get us through this. We're now to the point where England are probably going to try and keep him. Well, they are going to try and keep him beyond this tournament now. And it's probably the right decision.
More Southgate balls.
Well, the thing is, you've got to think of what it brings as a team. And everyone, all these players, the way they go and embrace Southgate after matches, the way that Jude Bellingham hugged Gareth Southgate on that pitch after that win, was just like, he's built such a bond, and that counts for a lot. Going back to what you're talking about with Saka v Cucurella, Cucurella's always been quite physical with Bukayo Saka. He's always tried to rough him up a little bit, really, to make it let him know that he's in the game. He'll do that again. Would I rather have Cucurella on my team or Saka on at the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd rather have Saka. The answer is Bukayo Saka. That's madness. But I think Cucurella has been absolutely outstanding.
He has been. That's the thing. That's why it's not madness, because people are like, oh, Cucurella is one of the players of the tournament. How are you going to combat that? So I'll tell you how we're going to combat that. We're going to get a bloke going up against him who played against him already a few months ago and beat him 5-0 and is way better than him. Saka is, I actually do trust him to do the defensive work too.
Yeah, so do I.
I really do. I think that, no, this guy is an absolute hero at the moment, isn't he? And rightly so. And he's,
this could be his final, mate.
This could be his final. Like, I hope it is, because obviously his penalty miss against Italy in the last final was heartbreaking. I can't imagine what it felt like for him, like to stand there at Wembley and miss that penalty and then he had the fallout of it. I don't think he was, you know, victimized like players like Beckham have been when they've had like personal abuse at every stadium they've then gone to in the months that followed. But the few days that followed certainly weren't great.
Yeah, I mean, the abuse he suffered was rancid. And equally, yes, there weren't effigies of him hanging in the streets. I agree, but equally, what he went through in the back of that tournament, I think, was abhorrent. And to bounce back in this way is just incredible. And you know, to have the bottle to stand up again and be like, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to stand up in another penalty shootout, and this time I'm going to convert it. There, you know, obviously, it brings back, you know, I imagine memories for older England fans of the redemption story of someone like Stuart Pearce, right? Where, you know, he obviously slotted that penalty and the raw emotion that came out of him at that moment. And Saka did it differently. Obviously, he just stood there and smiled. And it just was such a heartwarming moment.
I prefer Saka's calmness, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just think it's worth bringing that comparison up because, you know, there have been redemption stories again. And look, this would be one of the great redemption stories if he is the difference maker in the final. And honestly, I think that there's probably something in that if Bukayo Saka, I was going to say, what's the key battle? But I think we've already got onto it without this. If Bukayo Saka can pin Cucurella in his half, I think Spain will struggle to function down that left-hand side in the way that they have done all tournament. And then you start having players being able to double up on Nico Williams. You might be able to shift a player over to double up on Lamine Yamal. And actually, whilst there are incredible footballers across this midfield, and I think Fabian Ruiz still probably for me remains the player of the tournament so far. I thought he was excellent again against France, even if he did miss that big chance. You know, there is also that sense of being like, well, who's going to actually cause the damage? Morata has been in centre midfield almost as much as Harry Kane has. Now, Dani Olmo obviously runs beyond him and there's obviously different dynamics going on there. But, you know, there is that sense of being like, who is going to be the person in the middle to finish it off if the wingers get closed down? I don't know what the answer to that is. So yes, I think that battle between Saka and Cucurella and what that, the knock-on effects that might have on Nico Williams and how that left side works is going to be very interesting to witness.
Yeah. If we're talking about players at the tournament and stuff, then Lamine Yamal's definitely coming into his own and a goal in the final pretty much seals that for him. As he can talk about Ballon d'Or, which I think is probably a bit far-fetched, but
it might be a little bit premature at this point.
But that's genuinely been I've read a fair bit about that. But yeah, it's been very strange. Going back to just like Saka and Southgate and kind of abuse and how they come through and stuff. Like, obviously, we're living in a different time because when you have your bad moments now, so much of it is on social media compared to being like at you directly, like in the streets, in the stadiums, because a lot of match going fans do have a bit more sympathy these days, and who knows who's sending messages and stuff. But Southgate has felt the force of the fans, and like they've let him know that it was not acceptable what they were seeing from him, literally having cups thrown at him and stuff.
It's probably not acceptable to throw cups at your manager.
Not really. It's just frustration and there's no need to ever throw anything at anyone on a football pitch. But with Saka, I've always felt that he kept the support of everyone. Like, everyone's always supported him, like, in person, it's felt like. And if they haven't, then you're an idiot. And he's about to show you why you should have. Because, as I say, like, just keep imagining this as being Saka's final, and I can just see a moment in which he cuts inside and curls one into the bottom corner, and that's England's moment, and I hope that's the way it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, how do you see it playing out? What is your prediction for this final?
I do actually think we'll go behind. I think we'll go behind. And I think that is going to be such a big test of the resolve of this team. And it will be the real telling factor of whether we deserve to have this moment, because it will definitely be the biggest test we've faced so far. This is the best team we've come up against. And to go behind them, if you can turn that around, then you absolutely deserve the trophy. My feeling is that it probably ends in a draw after 90. And I hope it doesn't go all the way to penalties, basically.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. So, like, obviously England are good at penalties now, right?
We've had one good penalty shootout.
Fine, but actually, I don't think that's quite fair. I actually think that, obviously, there was a good one against Colombia all those years ago in the World Cup. But more than that, I think that there is a sense now that when England's five penalty takers who stepped up against Switzerland stepped up, there was not a single part of me, and I said this on Monday, there's not a single part of me that thought England were going to lose that. I was like, looking at those five penalty takers, you're like, yeah, England are going to win this. They're going to win this. All five of those people are going to convert. Now, Unai Simon, for his faults, and he does have some, he makes one clanger a game, and England need to be able to capitalize on that if they're going to win this, is an actually very good penalty saver at the moment. He stopped three in La Liga this season and three very, very good penalties that he saved as well. And I think that that's interesting going into this in terms of the dynamics. Obviously, the Pickford trick is now public knowledge, right? What's on the water bottle, etc. Now, whether that works as a double entendre or, you know, a kind of double bluff is a different question. And whether he then is able to change that up midway, who knows? But that trick's kind of, that card's played, if you will. That card's on the table. So what that looks like for this next penalty shoot, I think is going to be interesting. And if it does go all the way, again, I mean, look, I've spent my entire time talking about this game on the fence about who I think is going to win it. And I remain there. I really don't think that there's much between these two teams, not in terms of performances at the tournament. I think Spain have been the better side. In terms of team on paper, I think England probably just about shade it. I don't think there's as much in it as you'd tend to do, but I think that England probably do still shade it. In terms of who comes up with the goods in a final, England have been there, Spain haven't in this iteration. All of those things, I think, play into this. So we are literally at a coin toss, and I think it goes all the way. I think this goes to penalties.
The only thing I'm hoping,
if Rice misses a penalty to lose England this tournament, I swear it. I will be insatiable.
The only thing I'm hoping is that if it is 1-1 and we're late in the 90, we're getting there, you know, the clock's ticking through the 80s towards the 90.
And he brings on Ollie Watkins.
We've now got something tangible to cling on to. We've now got two big memories to cling on to. And that could work, you know. That could work.
Third time's a charm.
So I'm hoping that I get another moment like that, because I don't want this to go and beyond the 90. I just want it settled.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a Sunday evening. It's all right for you. It'd be like 2 in the afternoon where you
Sunday
are.
Sunday afternoon, mate. Yeah, you have, go to the beach after.
Pleasant time. Yeah, exactly. For me, I'd be like, it's 11 o'clock, lads. I want to go home. I've got the Copa America final in 2 hours. I want to be comfortable and on the sofa.
Yeah, full day of it.
Absolutely. Excellent. All right. Well, unless you've got anything else on England or Spain, I think we will leave part one there. And after the break, we're going to be talking about Colombia, Argentina in the Copa America final. Don't go anywhere.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
First, the bad news. SAP Business AI won't help you generate cubist versions of your family's holiday photos. But it will help you understand which supplier is best to help you roll out your plant-based packaging in Southeast Asia. Or identify the training your junior project manager needs to rise up the ranks. And automate repetitive tasks while you focus on big innovations. So you can be ready for the next opportunity. Revolutionary technology. Real-world results. That's SAP Business AI.
The all-new season of Futurama is streaming on Hulu.
That's great,
but I have to warn you, it's completely brilliant.
The interplanetary hit is back,
The very survival of Earth is at stake.
Is everybody okay? Is anybody hurt?
Nobody's okay. Everybody's hurt.
Watch the all-new season of Futurama.
That's the best damn show I ever saw.
New episodes Mondays, streaming only on Hulu.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches. Now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles. Just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Back to school creeping up? Don't sweat it. Ollie Mood Supplements protect your inner chill. Bring home Hello Happy or Goodbye Stress today and do wellness on your terms. Find Ollie at a store near you or at OLLY.com.
Ollie!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back to Ranks FC in part two, where we are crossing to Dean's side of the pond and talking about the Copa America final, which will take place in Miami a couple of hours after the Euros final is settled. Very, very exciting day of football Sunday. DJ, this is an interesting one because in many ways there are some similarities. Colombia have been the form team across the tournament. They've played with real attacking verve, attacking zip. They've been a really exciting team to watch. They've proved that they have a little bit of the steel in the semi-final, where before that it had mostly been silk, I think, from this Colombia side. They've beaten most of the better teams in this tournament. They've had to deal with Bielsa's Uruguay. They've already topped the group that also contained Brazil as well. Whereas Argentina are the team who clearly are the better side on paper. They are reigning Copa champions. They are reigning world champions. But also their route to the final has been relatively soft, I think. And realistically, I don't think we've seen the best of this Argentina side whatsoever. And yet, they have found ways to win and win and win and end up in another final. So the parallels are there. That might be where they stop, because I think there's probably more to this game than trying to draw just parallels to the Euros final. But I do think that it's an interesting one to consider when you're looking at these two finals on the same day, that we could be in for relatively similar ideas being put in place, and the team who have been, you know, the team to watch, the ones that maybe shoot out of the blocks faster, does experience tell in the end?
Yeah, it's on paper, I think everyone's just going for Argentina. I think that's the obvious place that you go, even if you haven't watched a kick. But I think that there's certainly reason to give Colombia a good chance in this game. I'm slightly concerned about the fact that they've had less rest and they've just had a very intense and emotional semi-final, whereas Argentina have had their feet up and gone through the motions to get here. But this is a good final. This is a really good final because you've got the best international team in the world against a nation which is so passionate, so desperate to win. And when those two things collide, it should bring about a great, great match. You would expect Argentina to try to just control things and get their noses in front and then see it out from there. But, you know, let's move away from the fact that they are the world champions. Like, this is an Argentina team that are not trustworthy, that have definitely collapsed multiple times in the recent history and given away goals. And Colombia have to remember that. They have to remember that this team is not unbeatable. And the fact that Argentina haven't really had to get out of second gear in this tournament so far could work in Colombia's favour. Talked in the first section about England having to prove that they are worthy of being in a final and to win a trophy. Well, Argentina don't quite have to do that because they've done enough over the past couple of years to prove that they are the best team around. But at this tournament, they haven't really had to prove it yet. And this is the first match where they've got to actually turn up, put it up a few levels, and then go and push Colombia out of sight. I don't think that'll be as easy as it sounds.
No, I don't either. Absolutely not. And look, obviously there is the kind of interesting idea of what the crowd is going to look like, because actually when you come to the Colombia Uruguay game, there were pockets of Uruguay fans here and there, and there was a little ultra section as well, but mostly the stadium was pretty much yellow.
It was yellow. And it was yellow.
It's been like that for quite a lot of Colombia's tournaments.
They're
so
amazing,
far.
Mate. They are amazing.
Is this the first time where it looks a little bit more half and half? Is probably the first question I'd have in terms of there will be a lot of Argentinian support, especially given that this final is in Miami. Now, obviously, that will have its effect on both sides and have a positive effect on both sides, in that there is a large Spanish-speaking community that will come from, obviously, both of these sides. But the fact that Messi is playing this final, if not on home turf, because it's not a Chase, it's a Hard Rock, but in his own city now, probably has an effect on what this crowd looks like and what the, you know, who the crowd are supporting. And I thought it was interesting watching the semi-final and watching how much Luis Diaz played the crowd up. And yes, they had 10 men and they had to deal with the ramifications that came with playing a man down for the majority, well, for the entire second half, but, you know, for the majority of the game, it was before half time. What I wonder how that changes and what that looks like in this stadium, if it's still majorly pro-Colombia as a crowd, or if it's a little bit more partisan in terms of being half and half. I don't know what that looks like yet, so I find that interesting. Look, Colombia just riding a wave, right? 28 games unbeaten now under Néstor Lorenzo. They're the top scorers in the Copa with 12. As I said, they sailed through that group. They beat out Brazil for top spot, and they fought in that last game with Brazil to maintain that top spot and get their route through, which meant they didn't have to play Uruguay in the quarterfinals, which was interesting, I thought, in terms of the fact that they were able to do that. And look, we've spoken about the fact that Brazil weren't at their best by any stretch of the imagination in this tournament, but it's still beating Brazil in a major tournament, or you know, getting the better of Brazil in the group stage, should we say, because they didn't actually win that game. Then they stick 5 past Panama, which is, one, a massive bonus in terms of just being like, oh, we're actually really good. Mm. And then they have to show something very, very different against Uruguay in order to grind it out at 1-0 up with 10 men for an entire second half against a side that's been pretty relentless through the entire tournament. That's good stuff, you know, from kind of start to finish. And at the heart of it all is James Rodriguez, who surely at this point is the shoe-in for player of the tournament. Golden boot winner in the 2014 World Cup, and a decade on, he is showing all sorts of sparkle again for his country. 6 assists and a goal from his 5 games so far, being named man of the match in 4 of them. His set piece deliveries have been absolutely lethal. And I think this is where the game is won or lost. If Argentina can deal with these set pieces, then they have enough, obviously, like in attacking quality to make one moment count. But if they can't, and Uruguay really struggled with this, Colombia actually were quite wasteful, I thought, at times in this game with their set piece attacking in a way that they haven't really been throughout this tournament. If Colombia can get these set pieces right again, I can see this happening. Now, they won the Copa in 2001 with an Ivan Cordoba header from a set piece. And I've just got a funny feeling we could be in for something similar here.
Yeah, I mean, they are to some degree, they are dependent on James Rodriguez turning up and turning it on for this final. He's just an expert on what he stood around the ball and weighing up where he's going to stick it. And that is something that's extremely hard to combat. He's 33 now and his club career's gone a bit wayward. I reckon 9 out of 10 people in Europe couldn't even tell you where James Rodriguez plays his football anymore. Maybe even beyond Europe, who knows? But his club career
is Sao Paulo, if you're wondering.
It's Sao Paulo, yeah. But that's the answer to the quiz question. Where does James Rodriguez play football? But
I'm just showing off there. Apologies.
He's been on a bit of a tour, hasn't he? Since his Real Madrid days went askew. He went to Bayern for a bit. He's been at Everton, Al Rayyan, Olympiacos.
Yeah, he went to Qatar and then Greece. It was fun. James Rodriguez world tour.
He's well travelled.
Fun at times.
He's well travelled. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, obviously, I do feel too that James Rodriguez is very, very influential to how this this pans out.
Are Argentina going to set the Rodrigo de Paul show on James Rodriguez? I mean, look, for the first 20 or 30 minutes, the way that Uruguay set up with Bentancur in the midfield and then Ugarte playing at centre-back actually did nullify his threat quite a lot. Now, obviously, that allows for other people to step up. And I thought that Luis Diaz had another incredible game, stepped up and made the difference and was just a constant threat down that left-hand side, as we kind of talked about in the previews on Monday. But generally, kind of the way that Uruguay set up to nullify James, I thought worked quite well until Bentancur went off injured. Ugarte had to step into midfield. They had to shuffle the pack. And suddenly James had all sorts of space to start to actually pull the strings again. And that's when Colombia asserted control on that game. So I wonder if Argentina do try and stick the Rodrigo de Paul show on James and try to shut him down that way. But equally, I do wonder what, you know, how they deal with this threat from the flanks, because there were some really, really good performances in this Colombia side out even when James wasn't playing well. I thought Richard Rios was really, really good again until he went off, and hopefully that injury isn't enough to rule him out of the final, because for me, he's been one of the players of the tournament. He's been absolutely sublime, can kind of do it all, adds that kind of hard tackling in the midfield, also has some of the quickest feet I've ever seen. He's been absolutely sensational from that right hand eight spot, if you will. Mojica, I thought, was brilliant. There were question marks over where he should start for this Colombia side. They're going to miss Munoz. Obviously, absolute moment of madness from him on a booking to throw an elbow into Ugarte. Like, no idea how he thinks on earth he's going to get away with that, especially with 20 seconds before the halftime whistle. Like, obviously, oh, just keep your
so
head down.
Dumb.
And now he's
dumb.
Bound for the final. So
ridiculous.
Intriguing. I mean, Santiago Arias did really well when he came on, I thought, and did a good job filling in for him there. But I think they will miss his goal-scoring exploits. That's not to say Arias is a bad player. I just think Munoz is good at getting in at that back stick and making things happen. But generally, I think that across the board, and you know, it's similar to what I said with England, how many Argentina players do you go, well, they'd get in the team of the tournament? Not loads at this point, I don't think. Not loads. Definitely not Lionel Messi, who's had a bit of a come-see-come-star tournament, to be perfectly honest with you. Lautaro is top scorer at the moment, but equally got dropped for Julian Alvarez in the last game. And obviously that came to fruition in the way that he scored the opener, but still a bit of a weird one considering the form that Lautaro was on up to that point. You know, when you're talking about a Copa team of the tournament, you've probably got three, four, five Colombia players in there. There's maybe one or two for Argentina, and similar to what we were talking about before.
Yeah, look, it's harsh on Lautaro, but he's not going to leave Messi out, is he? And this is his last international final, probably. He hasn't turned up properly yet, but you know, Messi's Messi and
can do messy things. I mean, the goal that went off the keeper's face in the last game was one of the funniest goals I think I've seen in a long time. And that pretty much summed up Messi's tournament for me so far.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you turn to a fight, you're like, oh, am I going to see Messi? And it's like, you're probably not going to be seeing peak Messi, no. But
kind of doesn't matter if he bends a free kick in from 30 yards.
That's it. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
James might do the same at the other end.
Well, this is it, mate. And I think that's how it's going to be interesting in terms of how this game pans out. I think if it's one of the reasons I think Colombia have got a really good chance here is because if it's tight, and say it's 1-1, and you're getting into the later stages of the game, and Argentina are going to be expected to go on and take the game and to go and find that winner. And they'll be feeding the ball into Messi and just looking for him to do it. And they'll be crowding him out. And then Colombia hit them on the break. That's what I'm thinking. That's how I see Colombia winning this game. They probably go ahead with some sort of set piece routine that comes off. And Argentina then get themselves back. And you're thinking, okay, they'll come back and turn this game around. But the longer that Colombia stay in this game, the more I believe in them to break away and make something happen. And I trust them. I trust them to make the most of their big moment when it comes. It'd be thrilling. If this game can stay tight, then it's really going to be thrilling. But that's Colombia's job. Just make sure they are in this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're so dynamic, and there is this kind of sense of, and you know, we're talking about a team who are coming up against the reigning world and Copa champions here, but there is a sense of invulnerability about the challengers, which is a kind of weird place to be, right? There is that sense that towards the end of the Uruguay game, and yes, Uruguay opened up the odd chance after Luis Suarez came on and they sort of threw everything at Colombia. You watch the Colombia players sort of knocking the ball out of the back and finding the spaces and trying to actually, you know, open them up one more time. And to be honest, they should have finished the game off. There was a couple of massive opportunities missed to make it 2-0 and kill it dead in the dying minute. But there is that sense that they just think that no one's going to beat them. They feel like they're not going to be beaten, which is a weird thing for a team coming in as challengers and not necessarily something you expect. You know, when a team comes in as reigning champions, and obviously you go back to Spain in 2012, and it's worth bringing that up because if Argentina were to win on Sunday, it would become, you know, they would become the first team ever to win the Copa World Cup Copa treble, but it will automatically bring up those visions of that Spanish side that did 2008, 2010, 2012, right? They will go into that category of generational teams who had a stronghold on international football for a period. And you kind of look at that and the difference. And when Spain came into that final in 2012, I don't think anyone had any doubt whatsoever that they were going to win the game, right? Mm. It obviously ended 4-0, but there was no chance that Spain were going to lose that game. They just felt like no one was going to touch them. And in a kind of odd way for someone who isn't a reigning champion, Colombia have that same sense of invulnerability that just makes me feel like this might be their time.
Yeah, and this is what's weird. I mean, you've got Spain versus England and Argentina versus Colombia. And I fancy England and Colombia. Which isn't the obvious answer to that question.
No, but it's also one of those kind of strange ones where, you know, we talked at the top about one team sort of fumbling their way a little bit, you know, some decent performances, but not really there. And the other team storming into the final. And you've gone for one of each, which is probably, to be honest, how it yeah. plays out, right? It probably will work out like that. Now, whether it's Spain and Argentina or Colombia and England, I don't know. But the logic to me says you either back England and Argentina or you back Spain and Colombia. That's the thing that matches up in my head yeah. because of the way that I'm envisaging these finals and the kind of logic that I'm taking into them.
Well, I have bias that you don't have, that's why.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe there's that. But I do think it's going to be a very interesting day on Sunday. I think I'm going to edge Spain and Colombia. But again, as I said at the top, I think that's a coin flip in the Euros final. I feel more confident about Colombia winning than I do about Spain beating England, which is a bit of an odd place to be in itself, right? But I just think, see this team, I see the way they set up, I see that confidence that seems to flow through them at the moment. I see the weapons they have across the pitch in order to make different things work. And I think that battle between Cordoba and Romero is going to be one for the ages because they're two lads that love a tussle. I think that can be really, really interesting. I think Luis Diaz will have the beating of whoever Argentina decide to field at right back against him. But equally, then you don't count out the creative power that Argentina have down the other side. So it's a truly incredible day of football. And if it wasn't, I mean, it's perfect for you. The afternoon and then the early evening kickoffs are dreamy. But my 8 p.m., 1 a.m., I'm looking forward to that 8-hour slot where I just watch games and I think about them and talk about them. And I'm really looking forward to discussing them with you on Monday on the postbox.
Oh, mate, there's down at Pacific Beach here, there's a bar down in the front. And we were driving past the other day because I'd watched the Colombia game in like a pizza restaurant, but it was like a sports bar type thing. So we watched most of the game in there. And we left before full time and was driving back. And there's this huge, huge screen outside this bar. And it was just packed with Colombians. And I was like, oh, I'd love to watch the game somewhere like that. Like, I don't know where I'll end up watching the Copa final, but there's a lot of Colombia shirts around here. And I'm thinking that might be a vibe to get in. Obviously, there'll be Messi shirts around when it comes to final day. And there's no doubt about that. And there's certainly a fair few Argentinians that will be around the place. But it's the Colombian vibe that I'm here for at the moment. And I think that's what I want to be part of as a neutral, just watching that final.
One of the best experience, footballing experiences of my life was going to see Colombia play. They played a couple of times at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, I did.
But just being in the throng of that and in the midst of it, going down to Elephant and Castle beforehand and traveling up with the Colombia fans. Honestly, just such joy. So, I mean, look, I'm here for it. You know that I stood behind Argentina at the last World Cup and I was very, very excited and very emotional when they won it. I'm kind of here for the James moment, the kind of James redemption arc, and Colombia winning this tournament as well. I think it'd be pretty special if that one comes to pass. But with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day, DJ. So anything else you'd like to add? Is there a transfer show going out on the Patreon?
Yeah, we should have a Patreon show out. Might even be on there already, to be honest, if you have a look right now. I'm sure I'll be going through the gossip column as usual, but I've got a few other things going on in the background that I'll be bringing to your attention. It's good that the end of the Copa and the Euros brings about new focus on transfers actually happening. And obviously we did a show in the week on the main feed about big player deals that could now come into focus. So even a couple of those are starting to move forward now. So I'll make sure that I bring you all the latest on that.
Absolutely. The link to our Patreon is in the description as ever. We would love you to come and join us over there. Dean's going to be upping the ante on transfer shows as a post box. I'll be looking back at both of these finals on Monday as well. So loads to get your teeth into, and free trials still are available if you haven't already taken advantage of that. We'd recommend that you do so. It's lots of fun over there. But for now, all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Matt Collins, thank you so much for listening to Ranks FC as ever. We really appreciate you all, and we hope that you enjoy both of these finals at the weekend. What a Sunday of football we have to look forward to. And of course, Galway versus Donegal in the All-Ireland semi-final. That's your kind of scene. But for now, thank you so much, and we'll see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy. Peace.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's HIGH5casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.